Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Miles Toms Prower.
Haha, and today we are talking about not Sonic the Hedgehog number one, not Sonic the Hedgehog number three, but Sonic the Hedgehog number two.
Is this the most 90s game we've yet to cover, Josh?
Oh, this is like the quintessential 90s game, yeah.
We've done three Mario games to date, but we kind of realized that we've never done Mario's rival, the second greatest mascot platform star of the 90s.
So it's like, yeah, I mean, Crash Bandicoot's right there, you know. He was in the 90s.
Well, we'll get to him. That's actually an interesting that's an interesting conversation that I don't have in my notes. Mario versus Sonic versus Crash. But yes, as Josh said, this is Sonic 2, not Sonic 1, Josh. A lot of my notes kind of go over Sonic 1 in summation, but I feel like this is, for a lot of people, the definitive Genesis Sonic game. Would you say so?
Yes, 100%. So there's, when people think of the moves that Sonic has, when people think of the game itself, when you picture Sonic the Hedgehog, this is the game that you think of, right? The first one came out, and the first one was huge. Don't get me wrong. The first one was amazing. It was crazy.
And it's an analogy you like to make a lot of times on this show, Josh. You talk about sequels that outpace the original. I mean, I honestly feel like Sonic 2 is to Terminator 2. You know, it's the sequel you can jump right into with no context of the original and still enjoy the hell out of.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And later down the road, years later, you were able to come back and enjoy this game even more, which is something that's completely unheard of in video games.
Do you mind if I give you the nitty-gritty?
Me the nitty-gritty. Let's jump right into
all
that. Because right. Because we're going so fast right now. Grab your chili dogs, people.
Fast. The nitty-gritty. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was released on November 21st, 1992 in Japan, and then 3 days later, on November 24th, 1992, North America and Europe got it. This was the first worldwide rollout for a video game. Now, it's not day and date simultaneously, but video games never had come out this close with this targeted of a release campaign. And in America, we got it on what was known as Sonic Tuesday. Sonic Tuesday.
Oh, man, it was so great.
Huge marketing campaign, and we'll explain why. Now, this was originally released, as Josh said, on the Sega Genesis. Let's just call it by its proper name, the Genesis.
Yeah.
And eventually it was ported to, like, everything. This is available in, like, Sega compilation collections. This is available on Nintendo consoles, on Microsoft consoles, on Sony consoles. You can get Sonic 2 basically anywhere nowadays. There's no way you cannot play it. And, of course, it was developed by the Sega Technical Institute and published by Sega.
Now, one thing I love, and I don't know how much nitty-gritty work you've done on this, Tom, but do you know about the Sega Technical Institute? Do you know so much about them? Do you know anything about them?
I know a good deal of things. I have read, personally, the book Console Wars. I don't know if you've picked that up. It was recently turned into a documentary that's available on
really
the
good.
So you caught the documentary.
Yeah.
The book's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. So we've each interacted with it in some way. But what do you know about the Sega Technical Institute? Do you think our audience would like to know?
Sega Technical Institute, right? Housed a man. A man came from there who created the video game Marble Madness. Right? Okay. You're familiar with Marble Madness, right? It's a great arcade game, right?
The ball.
Yeah, the ball. That man's name, who was the producer of Sonic the Hedgehog 2, was Mark Cerny. Mark Cerny, one of the brains behind the release of the PlayStation 4, of the release of the PlayStation 5, and the father of our Lord and Savior, Knack himself.
We have to get our lineup of iconic boys set in stone, Josh, because first it was Wario, now it's Knack.
Knack is our Lord and Savior.
All right, and Babu Frick is my son. We got to be clear.
See?
So.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. But when did you first encounter Sonic? Was it through the first game or the sequel we're talking about today?
I encountered Sonic when I got my Sega Genesis. It came with it. That's the bundle that I got. So it was packaged with it, the first Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay. That's very interesting. So, Josh, I want to talk a little bit about the birth of Sonic. And I think you may know a good deal of this, so let's talk about it together as we bounce back and forth.
Yeah.
So, pre-Sonic, Sega, they wanted to be the Randy Orton to Nintendo's John Cena, you know? They were doing everything they could to rival him. But Nintendo had a not just good games, but an iconic mascot that just connected with people, you know? And for a little bit, Josh, do you know who Sega was positioning to be their mascot?
It was Alex Kidd.
It was Alex Kidd for the Master System. You know, those little grid design covers.
The ugliest cases or artwork for video games. I don't even want them to be shown over in my collection because they're so ugly.
I'm sorry, Josh. I had to put clips up, so you'll be seen for a moment. But yes, Alex Kidd for a little bit was going to be the mascot of Sega. But Sega was getting kind of cold feet on Alex. They were like, we just don't think he's going to beat Mario. So they held an internal design contest at Sega Japan. They were like, create a mascot. Anybody in the company, you submit it, and if we like it, it wins. And one design was chosen. It was, humorously enough, written out on a napkin. And it was a little blue hedgehog who the creator initially named Mr. Needle Mouse. Mr. Needle Mouse was eventually renamed Sonic after the concept of supersonic speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he got his name, Sonic the Hedgehog. So we had the main character. What kind of gameplay are we going to base it around? Well, his co-creator, Yuji Naka, got the idea for fast gameplay, funnily enough, from Super Mario Brothers. Mr. Naka was obsessed with playing World 1-1 as fast as he could, just rushing through it, blitzing over enemies, and he translated that concept of fast platforming gameplay into Sonic. So, Josh, if you think about it, speedrunning actually created Sonic.
Yeah. I mean, if he only just would have waited 34 years, he would have been able to experience playing Mario World 1-1 on Mario 35, because that's all you do is play that level over and over and over and over again. He could have just did it
as
in
fast as you can.
Competitive version. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you gotta save all those seconds. here's a fun fact that I didn't learn until I was doing research today. So there was a bunch of things done to like make Sonic cool and appealing to the American public, and a lot of these were struck down. They initially were going to put him in a rock band. They initially were going to give him a human girlfriend.
Yep. We got that in 06.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
I said we got that in 06.
It's like they brought it back in 06, and then and then everyone was like, this is a bad idea. And they were like, oh, it's almost like we were taught this lesson in advance, but we didn't listen. Something that did stick, a suggestion in his original development. Do you know where his personality comes from?
No.
His can-do attitude, his get-it-done style, and his suave kind of cockiness?
No. I might once you tell me, but no.
Bill Clinton.
That's what he was. He was. Wasn't he going to play the saxophone in the band?
I don't remember that from my research, okay. But I from at least three sources that I looked up, because for the first I was like, this can't be real, and then I saw it again and I was like, oh. And then yeah, they Sonic's, you know, like, not, yeah, you're too slow. His attitude is from Bill Clinton, so
I mean, I can see the resemblance.
Remember when presidents were cool enough to inspire video game characters? As Josh said, he experienced Sonic for the first time when it came bundled with his Sega Mega Drive. And that is, in a way, what led to Sonic initially being the big hit it was. When the first Sonic game came out in 91, it was a modest hit, you know, but it wasn't until Sega made the decision to A, reduce the price of the Mega Drive, and B, bundle Sonic with it,
yeah,
that they took off. It increased their market share, making them, like, you know, more competitive towards Nintendo, and it put Sonic in the hands of more gamers, and that's when he blew up. And it all led to, as Josh mentioned, with Mark Cerny and the Sega Technical Institute, they were being pressured to fast track a sequel to Sonic 2 and get it out within a year.
Yeah, I think after the once like the release of Sonic 1 came out, I think they had like 5 or 6 months to create Sonic 2. And you think about that nowadays, like, can Cyberpunk have released in 5 months?
Can you imagine if we found out in a couple weeks that, like, Cyberpunk 2 is coming in November, we're going to get it done, and, you know, like, yeah, it would literally be like that.
Like, that is unheard of in gaming, right? And you think of, like, the most classic story of hurry up to get a game done, and that was E.T., right? And we know how that turned out. Is it as terrible as people say it is? No. There's far worse games out there than
there are E.T. worse games than E.T., absolutely.
Yeah, but it's just unheard of that something like this, and it stuck, and it hit, and it was a phenomenon. I think going into the release of Sonic Tuesday, they sold 750,000 pre-orders in 1992.
Yeah, that says so much. Like, that's 750,000 would be, I think, disappointing in this day and age. But back then, you know, can you even imagine?
And just looking at the difference between Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, the graphical difference between those two games is night and day. Like, the graphical...
It's polished. They looked at what they had, and you know the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So they didn't throw anything out or ruin anything. They just were like, well, now we have the money, the approval, and the technology to just do this again, but way better. And they did it.
Yeah.
And that's always great, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, like, it's like a full enhanced version of it. And there's so many things that were added, right? And went in... Now, I don't know about how much of the history of Sonic 2 that you're aware of, but, like, the original idea of Sonic 2 was that it was going to be kind of time traveling. It was going to be going through different worlds, and however, they didn't have enough time to do this, which... Like, it was a little too ambitious, yes, and things fall along the wayside. So they stuck with the game that they got, and, I mean, I wasn't upset with it.
I was not either. Now, Josh, when did you first encounter Sonic 2, specifically? We talked about Sonic 1.
It was Sonic Tuesday.
You got it on Sonic Tuesday?
Yeah, we got it that day.
I cannot put a specific, you know, like, date or year on when I first encountered this, but I have a lot of memories of playing this at the houses of my cousins who had Sega, and I just remember being, like, really into this one, you know, this, because this was different, this was so exciting, the gameplay was just so unique. So this is one that stuck with me for a long time. Like, I have very frequently on, like, phones and digital console stores, like, if I see Sonic 2 for, like, $3, I'm just like, yeah, I'll get it again. I said in our Chrono Trigger episode, Chrono Trigger is probably the game I've purchased the most in different formats. Sonic 2 is probably a close second.
Yeah. Man, Sonic 2, fun. It's super fun. And
that's the end of the show. Super fun. And
no, I remember playing it a lot. And the big difference between the first one and the second one was there was parts in Sonic 1 where it did slow down. Yeah. There were some worlds where it did come to a halt, and a game that was based off of speed, it sure went slow at times. However, Sonic 2 was go as fast as possible, move it. You know, it was all about speed. Even the bonus levels and stuff like that was all about speed, running down the tubes. You know what I mean? Running from side to side. It implemented that speed that Sonic's known for, right? Like, when you envision, you know, going fast, like, that's what you get.
In case any of our listeners somehow have not encountered Sonic 2, there's nothing wrong with that. Do you want to just describe the gameplay of this title for them?
It's a 2D side-scrolling platformer that is based all around speed and momentum. So the faster you go, the quicker you can travel. However, the quicker you can also get around certain obstacles. Now, with all Sonic games, though, you have multiple different ways you can go through every level. Sometimes you can launch yourself up into the skies and go into a different area of the map, or you can go underground and go through little caves and stuff like that, or you can stand on the middle part, go over across bridges, run across waters, go in waterfalls, all that kind of stuff. There's so many different places you can go in every level, and my gameplay could be completely different than Tom's gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting, these forked kind of paths that Josh describes, because the game emphasizes speed and exploration. And so, like, you'll start, and then, as Josh said, you can take multiple paths, and you'll narrow down to the same finale either way. There are some bonus stages that you can unlock throughout the level by finding certain things, but they'll always return you to the initial level itself. So the end goal is usually always just you get to, like, a finish line, or you get to the boss fight with Dr. Robotnik.
Yep.
Now, Josh, a criticism that I have, and that I've felt more as I've gotten older about the gameplay, is that I think the appeal of being as fast as you can really does override exploration in this game. You know, the size of the levels and the amount that you can explore, sometimes it feels like it's conflicting with how fast you want to go. Did you ever feel that way?
At first, like, I did. And then, you know, once you understand the levels, but, like, that's, like, there's the different fork branching paths, right? Like, you understand how the levels are going to work, so you know where something's going to be sooner or later. Yes, you don't have that exploration, but you do have the replayability of a game. The levels aren't long.
Yeah.
You can get through most of those levels in a minute to 2.5 minutes at most, I would say, which encourages you then to go back, hit the restart button, go back in, goof around, right? At this back in the day, that's what we had to do with games. You know what I mean? Like, just goof off with them. Like, we could explore as much as we wanted to. It wasn't about, I mean, yeah, it was about getting to the end of the game and beating it, but it was also just about having fun. And that was, I think, the difference between, like, a Mario game and a Sonic game, where it was Mario was, you got to get to the end, you got to beat this part because it's just going to get more and more difficult. Where Sonic didn't get super difficult, it just got crazier. That's really okay, the best way. Like, it just got crazy. And you can choose how crazy it gets, whether you want to take it slow or you want to take it fast.
So I personally like the one button control scheme of this game, Josh. You
jump.
Use the D-pad to move and just, hey, jump. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But do you know what the unique feature that is added in this game that was not present in Sonic 1?
Yes, you press down and you tap the shit out of that A button.
Yep, and you charge up a spin dash. And it not only gets you a nice boost of speed, but it, you know, as long as you're still in it, you'll plow through enemies. So dual function.
Yeah, it's awesome, because that was one thing I always remembered when I was younger, and I was like, oh, like, yeah, you just press down. And I'm like, wait, and I was playing Sonic 1. And I'm like, oh, crap, that's not available in this game. Like, because in Sonic 1, it wasn't there. All you had to do is, when you were gaining momentum, you just had to press down and he would go into the roll. This one actually let you do it whenever, wherever. And sometimes you could cheese some of the bosses with that move.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't play this, but I know that in the Game Boy Advance, like, Sonic Classic Collection, they added the spin dash to Sonic 1. And I can only imagine how much that might break that game. Because the spin dash is a completely new mechanic. And if you just drop it wholesale into a game that wasn't designed for it, you know, I wonder if it adds too much of an advantage, or maybe it doesn't work.
I would have a problem with it because there's certain levels that you can't run through. I know, I think World 2 and 3 in Sonic 1, like, you cannot run through those levels at all.
Isn't World 2 and Sonic 1 like Marble Hill Zone, and that's the one with the lava?
Yeah, it's the one, yeah, where you have to wait for platforms to actually rise and fall, and you have to wait for little platforms to move over for you to jump onto. You can't dash your way through something like that. Which, if it's added to it, yeah, that's a different spin on an old. It's looking at an old game in a new light.
So, Josh, we know that you are quite the completionist, quite the collector. You want to talk about the collectibles that are in this game?
The Chaos Emeralds? Is that what we're talking about, Tom? Chaos Emeralds. I mean, they were available in every Sonic game. Just, you go through little bonus rounds. Depending on how good you did in them, you would be awarded with them at the end.
And if you get all 7, Josh, what happens?
Oh, I don't know. I never got all 7, Tom.
You never got all 7?
No.
Oh, all right. Well, let me tell you. If you get all 7 Chaos Emeralds, you turn into Goku.
No, wait, is that in, no, that wasn't in this one. I thought that was in Sonic 3.
That is in this one. You go Super Hedgehog Saiyan, turn gold, super powered. You can fly around the screen, and yeah, the Chaos Emeralds have storyline significance.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain the very slim story real quick, Josh? Because it's not Moby Dick.
No, I mean Dr. Robotnik is bad guy kidnapping animals, turning them into robot.
That's bad. That's bad.
Turning them into robot minions to take over the world.
Just to clarify, he's not turning them into minions. Like, he's not turning them into the things on your mom's Facebook feed. He just means he means little helpers.
Yeah, like evil helpers. Doers. Other little evil doers.
We have to talk about the biggest new addition to this game. The addition of Sonic's best friend and sidekick, Miles Tails Prower.
Yep.
And Josh, what's his name if you take Tails out?
Miles Prower.
Look at these.
That is a really good pun. Like, it's clever. That is so good. Because you think of, like, a prowler, like, you know what I mean? Like, but then you put Miles in front of it, and it's like, oh.
Yep. So, yeah. Tails was also developed through an internal design contest because Sega was like, well, we want to do multiplayer, but there are no other characters, so we need to give Sonic a sidekick. Tails was the winning design, and boom, we got multiplayer and a new character all in one.
What's your thoughts on Tails?
I remember when I was a kid, I liked playing as Tails because he could float and or fly. The character has two tails. He's a fox with two tails. And in the game, if you jumped and then held down A, he would start turning them like a helicopter propeller, and he could, like, float. And as a little kid, I was like, yay, I can, like, fly over all the stuff I don't like and just get to the end, you know? I think I have an affection for the character from, like, liking him as a child, liking playing as him. So I'm positive. What about you, Josh?
When I was a kid, I was always like, oh, he's the player two character. I don't need him. I'm player one. I'm the only one, right? Like, get away from me. Get off my screen, right? Over time, though, I've actually grown to really like Tails himself. I like the design. I like the character. It's a good sidekick character to have in the game.
And it's, you know, much different, not to poop on Luigi, because Luigi is, you know, an all-time great. But I think it was striking and cool that the second player wasn't just, you know, like purple Sonic or orange Sonic. It was, we're going to create a brand new character with his own personality and his own, you know, thing. And that's, I like that because Tails fits, but then also functions as that second player. So good stuff.
It is so weird though, like how well Tails matches and fits into the universe. And same with Knuckles too, right? And I know he's not a part of this game yet. But like they're all the three of them, their designs together just work. Like it is a great combination.
For a while, Sonic characters were added thoughtfully and with restraint. And then I feel like after Knuckles is where things went crazy.
Yeah. There's so many levels and worlds in this game, Tom.
Yes.
What are some of the ones that stood out for you?
Let's see. So as Josh was mentioning, there's 8 worlds in this game that are split 11. Into two.
Oh, okay.
There are 11 worlds that are split into two acts each, with the exception of Metropolis Zone, which is towards the very end, which has 3 acts. So in terms of my favorites, well, Josh, I want to do something that we did on, what was the episode where we did a 1, 2, 3? Oh, it was on Hollow Knight. So on the count of 3, I want us to say our favorite at the same time just to see if we say the same thing, all right?
Okay.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Sky Chemical Chase. Plant Zone.
Oh, okay. We're going to match up one day. But,
one day it'll work.
One day.
So,
yeah,
so
my
why
personal,
Chemical Plant?
Well, Chemical Plant, I love the aesthetic. I love the design. The theme of Chemical Plant is like a top 10 video game jam. And I think it's the level that really showcases the momentum and speed we're talking about, where as soon as you can get like a good hit going, you can fly through that level with ease, and it's always exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you know, there's the danger of the water elements at that level, so it really encourages you to like keep your timing as exact as possible, so that not only you don't lose the momentum, but you don't fall into the deadly water. And I just love it. I absolutely love it. What about you, Josh? Tell me why Sky Chase is your favorite.
So I think I like that the most because it is the most different of all of the other levels, but it has my favorite characters and enemies in it, which are the turtles. The flying turtles. Okay. They're just so just depressed and flying. And then they have the little kids on the back with holding onto it. And you have to murder the kids. You can't murder the big ones. You only have to murder the kids. But I think I just like that design, that it was so different. Like Sonic was all about being on the ground and going as fast as possible. Now this time Tails is flying in a plane and you're on top of that plane attacking things that are being launched at your plane before you go into the Winged Fortress. It's almost like getting ready to go into the Death Star trench. As Sonic.
I get you. Yeah.
And I think it's so cool because it stands out amongst all the other levels. Now don't get me wrong though. Every single level in this game is banger after banger after banger. The soundtrack to this game is phenomenal.
I absolutely agree. Yes, Masato Nakamura, terrific soundtrack. I just want to talk. I mean, I'll just talk about more levels in conjunction with their music. So, you know, World 3, Casino Night Zone, that not only has World 4. My bad. Is the Crystal Cave 3?
The Aquatic Ruin, yeah.
Aquatic Ruin is 3, of course, of course. That's the one where Eggman at the end, he fires arrows into the big totem poles, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not remembering the order, but listen, all these other levels are bangers. Just take our word for it. So, World 4, Casino Night Zone. Such a great piece of music. And that's the one, Josh, where honestly, I would say that's probably the most fun to explore for me. Because you have like those slot machine mini games everywhere that if you shoot Sonic into them, you'll roll and you can get extra rings or extra lives or the risk of taking damage. And I feel that's where like the paths and the divergences are most interesting. What about you? What's another one that you enjoy off the top of your head?
Mystic Cave is pretty cool. I think just the layout and the art design to Mystic Cave, that was supposed to be one of the jungle levels from when it was the time traveling version of Sonic 2. And you can see a lot of that kind of stems from it, where it has that mystical ancient artwork to it. And I think that kind of stands out the most.
Well, Josh, since you bring it up, let's just dive into it. As you mentioned, this was meant to be a more ambitious game in that the plot, as you said, was going to involve like you would explore a level, and then there'd be time travel shenanigans, and the next one you went to would be like a future or past timeline. And the majority of the evidence that we actually have for that is in the game's code. There are some abandoned levels that are still in there. And the one I know about, Josh, I don't know if you do, and I'm sorry if I'm stealing your example, but there are two zones that are kind of tied together. There's Dust Hill Zone, which is like a desert level. And then there's an unnamed level, which fans refer to as Rock Zone.
Yep.
And it has...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. And it has basically the same layout, but its environment is different. And that's where people assume like, oh, Rock Zone is the same as Dust Hill, but it's clearly a past or future version of it.
So with Dust Hill, though, in the original thing, there was supposed to be a part in the level where you would hit it and it would change the climate. So you went from a desert climate to an Arctic climate. It was the same level, but now everything was on ice and there was snow and stuff like that to make it more slippery and faster for you, too.
Now, they did do this to an extent in Sonic CD. Have you ever played that?
I did not play Sonic CD. I didn't play Sonic CD or Sonic 3D Blast. Those were two that I just stopped after Knuckles.
Sonic CD, of course, on the Sega CD, that employed the time traveling concept. You're in a level, and then if you have enough rings and are going at a fast enough speed, there are these little signposts in levels, and if you hit them with those two requirements, they'll flip the level to either a past or future form of itself. And flipping the level actually can change what the final goal is, as we mentioned, it's still forked paths.
Yeah.
Like, if you stay in the present timeline, it's like you'll fight Robotnik. But if you go to the future, you'll fight, like, these evil robot overlords that Robotnik put in power years ago. And then if you go to the past, it's something I don't remember. But, you know, radically changes just on the fly.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so creative for just a very quick 2D platformer. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's so much thought that goes into it. As of 2006, right, this game sold about 6 million copies worldwide, right?
Okay, that's impressive, yeah.
It is. It's very impressive for a game. I mean, 2006, so, I mean, that's way after, you know, the release, 14 years after its release. The crazy part of all of this, how many copies do you think were sold in Japan?
Is it more than half or less than half?
Less than half.
Wow.
Tom, 400,000.
That, as of 2006, that was the lifetime Japanese sales?
Out of the 6 million copies worldwide, only 400,000 cartridges were sold in Japan.
Damn.
That's crazy to think, though, right? Like,
yeah. That America...
The power of the Western market. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Now, would you attribute that mostly to the console wars of the 90s?
I would. I mean, looking at this right now, okay, and this, listen, you got Tom here, who is pretty much the historian of the two of us, and you got me, who is the hot take of the two of us, right? Right? And I'm going to say something. I don't think that there is a huge gap in quality with the Mario trilogy and the Sonic trilogy.
I don't think I disagree on that.
Looking at them now, right? Like, you always, for all the time, you're like, Mario games are classics, right? And people don't really say Sonic games are classics. People look at Sonic nowadays as a joke. And it has its time, you know what I mean? They've kind of done that themselves. And there's some good games out there in between them. But Mario 1, of course, fantastic, right? Mario 2, take it how you will. Some people hate it. Some people love it. Mario 3, the pinnacle of Mario platformers on the NES. On the NES, right? So you go to Genesis. Sonic 1, it's good, but it's not what it was. Like, it's not what people like expected. It doesn't hold up. Sonic 2.
Sonic, yeah.
Great, great game. Sonic 3, masterpiece, right? Like, masterpiece and it is, they're not so different.
I would honestly agree with you, and I would go a little further. So, Sonic 1 and Mario 1, it's no contest. Mario 1, it's not just a better game, it's day and night, it's name brand versus great value. Is what it is. But Sonic 2, the fact that there is no real definitive Mario 2, there's Mario 2, the game that Japan was too afraid to submit to America because they thought they would hate it, and then there's Mario Brothers 2, the bastardization of Doki Dori Panic that we got, and I love, like, you know I'm a big fan of, but mm-hmm. It's almost like there is no Mario 2. And then Sonic's second installment is not only a confident, direct sequel, but it is the best kind of sequel that improves on it in every way. So I feel like within the head-to-head, the first two games, they're tied, you know? It's mm-hmm. Mario, way better first installment. Sonic, way better second installment. And like you said, you get to the threes. And I mean, just personally, I would probably play Sonic 3 over Mario 3 if a gun to my head. I would. And I'm not trying to be hot take.
No.
It's just I get more enjoyment out of the two back-to-back. In terms of trilogies, wow, that's a really good comparison, Josh.
It's weird to think of, right? Like, after years mm-hmm. of, you know, people putting Mario on a pedestal, right? And we could get into Sonic 3 one day, right? But after Sonic 3 came Sonic and Knuckles, okay?
Which is basically just Sonic 3.5,
right?
You want to get technical,
but that's where this comes into play, and we're coming back full circle, where you can put Sonic 2 on top of the Sonic and Knuckle cartridge and insert Knuckles into the Sonic 2 game. And now you can play Sonic 2 with a brand new character that came out 4 to 5 years-ish after the original Sonic 2. It's pretty much the first version of DLC in a cartridge format, right? And don't get me wrong, Knuckles, I think, is the best Sonic character. It hurts me that they ruined him with Sonic Boom, but and made him pretty super stupid. But Knuckles is awesome, right? And the fact that now you can go through and play through a great game with the best character, and you have his wall climbing abilities. So now there's a whole different way to traverse the game.
Well, let me bring that up again. In a way, kind of breaks certain levels, because I feel like, I feel like Knuckles is like the perfect candidate for exploring Sonic as an exploration game, because, as Sonic, you're worried about missing things as you're going too fast, but at Knuckles, it's like immediately stop. I'm going to climb up there and take my time and get to it, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. In certain ways, it's cool as hell. Don't get me wrong, but kind of breaks it. So, your wish is granted. You get Knuckles, but also what do you lose?
But it's 4, 5, 6. I don't remember the dates of this stuff, but
I think it was 97. You can yell at me. I'm sure there's listeners right now yelling at me.
Yeah.
Let's just say Sonic and Knuckles, I'm pretty confident, was 1997. So that's five years between
Sonic 2. So 5 years, right? Listen, you've already probably done everything you could in Sonic 2. Why not break it now?
It's not bad logic. I get you. I get you.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's so crazy to think now, like, after talking about it and after, like, the excitement of this game, that is the Sonic trilogy better than the Mario trilogy?
We were mentioning a lot throughout this episode about how big this game was, how culturally significant this game was. Let's kind of talk about the legacy of Sonic in this specific time period and how Sonic 2 only improved on that. Because Sonic crossed over to a lot of other forms of media.
Yeah, he got his own restaurant.
Well, I don't think they're exactly related. First and foremost, Josh, have you ever read a Sonic comic book?
I have not, but I know they exist.
Yep, the Sonic the Hedgehog comic, which is published through Archie, to my knowledge, it is the longest running video game comic book series ever.
I can see that. I can understand.
I think it's still going, but it is the longest running. So not only of that, we've got the cartoons of that era. Have you seen either of the cartoons that came out around this time period?
Yeah, I did. And Sonic was voiced by Urkel.
Yep, Jaleel White voiced Sonic. So there are two that came out around the release of Sonic the Hedgehog 2. There's The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, which is a little bit of like a Looney Tunes slapstick comedy Tom and Jerry kind of thing, where it's like Sonic and Tails having wacky adventures and getting away from Robotnik and his goons. And then there's Sonic the Hedgehog, which is abbreviated by a lot of fans as SATAM, SATAM. And that's like this dark, serialized adventure, kind of like, G.I. Joe or Thundercats, where it's like Sonic is literally a freedom-fighting eco-terrorist who's trying to stop Robotnik, who like is slowly taking over the world and turning it into a mega corporation that's polluting everything. Which one of these are you most familiar with, Josh?
The first one. I remember the Adventures a lot because it was Sonic and Tails running around foiling Robotnik's plans, but he had two sidekicks that were always there, and it was kind of like they were like the Bebop and Rocksteady. One was like a giant chicken, and the other one was, I can't remember what the other one was. Or it was like an armadillo. Something along those lines. But I remember that one a lot, mostly. It's just like with the Mario Brothers stuff. I remember the Super Mario Super Show over the Super Mario Brothers 3 show.
Okay. Yeah. I also had a childhood affinity for Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog because I was in that wheelhouse of, I liked Looney Tunes and Tom and Jerry and things like that. So it was like, oh, it's that, but Sonic. Great. I love this. I didn't see anything related to Sonic the Hedgehog, the dark series, until I got into college. when I was recommended by someone in like my college circle of friends to like check it out. And just with all due respect to anyone who's a fan of it, it really wasn't for me because I felt like the grim, dark seriousness of the plot was a little too much for Sonic for me. Like, I'm not saying it's like Christopher Nolan grim and gritty, but, you know, there was moments of levity, but it really was this, like, you know, Sonic and his friends are, you know, these freedom fighters who are going to liberate the world. And I don't know. It didn't mix with what Sonic was to me.
No.
I don't know.
I feel like Sonic was... I mean, he was a quintessential piece of 90s pop culture, but he had that attitude to him, but it was very cartoony and very over the top. And that's what, I mean, Sonic is the 90s.
Yes, the good and the bad.
Right? But that's the thing, like, if you put a picture up of Mario, people are going to associate Mario with the 80s.
I wouldn't personally agree with that because Mario has endured and evolved. Like, you know, I think Mario probably is more recognizable in his current form than his 80s form, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah.
Like but, go ahead.
But no, I'm saying so you think if you held up a picture and said to somebody, when did Mario come out? People would say, if you associate Mario with a timeline, like, you wouldn't associate Mario with the 80s?
Well, I wouldn't, because I discovered Mario in the 90s through his 90s games. You know, I think Mario just might mean more. I get what you're going for, but I'm kind of putting my personal spin on it. I think because Mario has been able to evolve better than Sonic has, Mario has personal meaning to whenever you discovered him, but Sonic very much is stuck in the 90s because his franchise didn't grow as successfully as Mario's did
until a couple years ago with Mania.
Yeah, there have been a lot of ups and downs for Sonic, but the downs have been pretty down.
Yeah,
and there are good games in the Sonic franchise as it went on. I personally like Sonic Adventure 2. I think that is a very fun game that I enjoyed. But again, then, like, you go from that and then you go down again. It's like Sonic 2, Sonic Heroes, Sonic 06, and then he's gonna crawl his way back up.
So Generations was good.
Mm-hmm.
Colors was pretty decent from what I remember. But then there's some pretty bad ones all along the way. Sonic Boom, Shadow,
Forces.
Well, yeah, Forces, like. And then it didn't really come back until they went back to what made Sonic great. And that was Sonic Mania. And Sonic Mania is amazing. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, like, Sonic Mania rules.
Yeah. It is the actual Sonic 4, not that stupid episodic one that we got.
Again, another down point.
Yep.
But, you know, we're just trying to be real with our perspective on history because that's what we do here. We look at old games in a new light. I have a great affinity for a lot of retro Sonic titles and, of course, Sonic 2 we're talking about. So, Josh, the final question is, do you think Sonic 2 holds up and is still worth playing?
Absolutely. Yes, it still holds up. It is. Yes, it is a 90s game, right? It's so old, but you can put it on. You know exactly how the game works and you can have fun with it. Right, like the speed, it's one of those things that, like, when I was playing today, I actually had like a smile on my face because I was like, I'm happy, like, with this thing. Like, it was just like, it's so weird.
Is that where your face muscles get all weird and your lips go up? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time I smiled, Josh.
Well, it's a new year, Tom. New year, new us. We can smile now.
I know we're supposed to be able to, but...
What's the worst that can happen in 2021?
Oh, it took us 6 days to find out the answer to that question. Well, yeah, Josh, I would agree that I think I still have a ton of fun with this. And in that regard, I think that does lend the idea that this does hold up. I think this could easily just be the first Sonic game you ever try, the first classic Sonic game you ever try. You can skip one. If you like this, go to three. If you don't play any other game but Sonic 2, you're still good, because I think this is the peak of it. And yeah, this game, it's just very enjoyable. It has its flaws. I, like, as I said, I think the speed overpowers the exploration, but you're here for the speed, and it when it's going at 100%, oh, it's exhilarating.
Let us know if you think that the Sonic trilogy is better than the Mario trilogy, because this is something now that has gotten way closer than I could have ever possibly imagined it to.
It is something that I think we should get a definitive answer on from as many video game fans as possible. It's like putting the original Star Wars trilogy against the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. You know, like, what, where are we going for here? I definitely want to find the answer to that.
Yeah. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you guys in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.